Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith, our producer, is Christian Ryan Ben. The end of November, beginning of December, right around the corner. Winter meetings right around the corner. Typically a time when the MLB offseason kind of picks up from a transactional standpoint, although we have seen some movement on the pitching market to this point. How much are you looking forward to just kind of the next few weeks and some of the activity that we should be seeing?
I am looking forward to it. I think that Shohei Ohtani is just such a special free agent that it's going to lead to a different kind of offseason. And even, you know, assuming that he signs with, let's say it's the LA Dodgers, that's still pretty interesting to me. That still will have huge ramifications in the industry for all kinds of teams trying to accomplish different things. So honestly, like, I am pretty intrigued to see what's going to happen. It's been a slow build. Not a ton has happened in the first few weeks of the offseason, but that sets up a really interesting couple weeks here. And the Blue Jays are right in the middle of that mix at this point with respect to Ohtani and also with different needs that they have to address.
In Ben's ideal world of, like, what would be most interesting from a baseball standpoint, where do you hope that Shohei Ohtani signs?
Well, I want to hear your answer to this as well. I will dive in here. I mean, look, as a baseball writer, I don't know if Willie Mays was a free agent or Barry Bonds was a free agent or Babe Ruth was a free agent. Like, wouldn't you want to cover that player? Wouldn't you want to have the chance to watch them try to accomplish historic things that haven't been done on a baseball field? I don't know. Like, that sounds more interesting to me than Jamer Candelario. So yeah, I hope that I get the chance to watch Shohei Ohtani a lot. Yeah, selfishly, I think that would be awesome. I think that it would be great for Blue Jays fans. I think it would be a really interesting time to have the Blue Jays in the spotlight. And, you know, from a career challenge standpoint, I think that would be really cool. It would create a lot of different possibilities. And, like, hey, if the Blue Jays end up signing Jamer Candelario and, like, Ahmed Rosario, I will do my best to write interesting stories nonetheless. But I think they would be a little more interesting if Shohei Ohtani signed. So, yeah, that would be, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. But for me, of course, that would be the preference.
What did Jamer Candelario ever do to you, man? Holy, what a stray for that guy to catch in like minute three of ATL. We're going to have to scrub this from the internet when the Blue Jays sign him for like 4 years, 60.
Oh, man, they very well might. I don't think they go to 60, but I mentioned him because honestly, like, he's on their list. Like, it could happen. So that's a real possibility. And, you know, you're not going to see quite as much excitement for that one if it does happen.
Well, you know, a lot of teams are going to be in at like 3 years, 45. So the Jays are going to have to go to 460 to lock up the prize that is Jamer Candelario. You know that.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. Tell me if you could choose it, where would you have Ohtani go?
So, I mean, look, I watch these games from the camera. Well, obviously, I want to watch Shohei Ohtani pitch every 5 days. But like, when is he going to pitch? Is he going to pitch again? Right? Like, those are huge question marks with, with his health and just what his career is going to look like going forward. I'd obviously like to watch him hit as well. When we were in LA at the beginning, it was very near the beginning of the regular season. It might've been on that opening 10 game road trip. We were in LA and just like, I think I saw him take Bassett deep, or I saw him take somebody deep, and it was like, holy, like, the ball's different off of his bat.
And Shohei with a drive to right. He has welcomed himself to Canada with his 39th home run.
I also saw Trout. I definitely saw Trout take Bassett deep, and like, that was just a tank. And just from my very privileged position where I get to watch these games, it is really awesome just to watch like greatness that close and to see how good those players are from the best seat in the house. So yeah, obviously I'd love to watch Shohei Ohtani play for 162 games or however many that he gets into. But just from like a baseball interest standpoint, kind of want the Rangers to sign him. Like, can you think of more of a super team in this era than what the Rangers would look like with a rotation of, again, like, will Shohei pitch eventually? Who knows? We'll see. Will he start again? Who knows? We'll see. But like, Scherzer, Evaldi, you got Jacob deGrom coming back from surgery. If Shohei's in there, just adding Shohei into a lineup that has like a Seager, a Garcia, a Simeon. And I really like the idea of winning the World Series and not resting on that like winning the World Series and then saying, yeah, and by the way, let's go and add the best player available, a generational talent, maybe the best player to ever play this sport in its long and illustrious history. Hey, we've already spent like $500 million on Seager and Simeon. Let's spend another $500 million on Shohei. Let's have like $800-900 million wrapped up in three players, maybe even $1 billion wrapped up in three players. That to me is very enticing and would be very compelling to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, the Rangers are going to be one of the most prominent suitors for Shohei Ohtani as well, because it's a really strong case. They have Mitch Garver hitting free agency, DH spot open, boom, put him in there. Like, it would be incredible. It would be a chance for him to continue building on a World Series championship with Texas and definitely have the chance to win. I think, like, any of these teams can make such a strong case, as long as they have the resources, they can make a strong case to themselves for going out and doing it, because he's just on a different level. And that's where I say, like, you know, it would be so fun to see him in Toronto, because look, we're interested in the Blue Jays. Our audience is obviously locked in on the Blue Jays, and our ATL listeners are going to be following this team, whether it's Breivik Valera and Jacob Wagaspak, or, you know, this year you have all kinds of players suiting up for the team. And the uniform,
throw somebody else under the send out another stray, then do it.
I don't need to
who's
do,
getting
I don't it. Need to do that today, but
is it Mitch least, White, is it Wes Parsons?
Oh, there we
who's
go.
Who's catching it?
There's a couple of good ones right there. Tyler Heineman, let's toss him in there. You know, Ernie Clement, like, there are all kinds of players on this team that are interesting, but Shohei would just take it to a totally different level. And this is why it's so interesting. And I think, okay, so you got the Dodgers, they're the front runner. To me, in this entire time, the Dodgers have been the front runner and they remain that. But at the same time, I was having this conversation with an executive not long ago with a different team, not with the Dodgers, not with the Jays. And you know, the person was saying, yeah, the Dodgers are the favorite, but end of the day, would you take the Dodgers or the field? And I said I would take the field. And this person agreed with me and said that ultimately, the Dodgers might be the most likely of all the teams, but they're still probably 30, 35, 40% at most to sign Ohtani. So that does create an opening for the Rangers, for the Blue Jays, for the Giants, for the Cubs. And I think that, you know, the Blue Jays are not on the Dodgers level, obviously. And if the Dodgers sign Ohtani, no one should be surprised. You shouldn't necessarily even be disappointed if the Dodgers sign Ohtani. That was always the most likely move. But at the same time, I do think the Jays have a legitimate shot. I think that end of the day, they are going to be one of the finalists for Ohtani in that group behind the Dodgers with the Giants, Rangers, Cubs, maybe the Red Sox sneak in there. Maybe there's a mystery team, but I think the Blue Jays are in that discussion where it's like, they have the need. They're motivated to win now. They have the money, which is massive and not every team has. And so that's where this actually gets interesting. And I don't think the Jays are more than like a 5 or 10% chance to actually sign Ohtani. But that's not nothing at the same time. Like 5 or 10%, you actually have something of a shot. And so how they go about trying to persuade him to sign in Toronto, super interesting. That's why I think these next couple of weeks are going to be a lot of fun to follow.
As long as we're working with percentages, would you put the Dodgers at like 33% and the field at 67%?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and so then you would put the Blue Jays at 10 to 15%. That's where you add them?
I'd say somewhere around 10%. Yeah, maybe 10 to 15%, somewhere in there. Like, I think that you could say the same range for Giants, Cubs, Rangers. And then there's some possibility that he, like, I don't think he goes to New York. I don't think he's a Yankee. But there's some possibility that maybe the Mets jump in or maybe the Red Sox jump in. But I do see the Blue Jays as like a legit contender among many, and behind the Dodgers, because the Dodgers are the number one.
It's funny because, like, you can whittle down the shortlist really quickly. Like, you can cut out just half the teams in baseball, essentially, in terms of resources. Like, they just do not have, well, they could have the resources. They don't have the willingness from an ownership standpoint to utilize those resources and to tap into those and to pay what it's going to take to sign Shohei Ohtani, which, by the way, 400, 450 million, maybe even 500 million. That's what we're looking at here.
Oh, man. If you can get him for 400, do it today. Like, yeah, right. That to me would be an incredible bargain. I think there's so many different ways to look at this. And obviously, I don't have a business background. And even for people who do have business backgrounds, trying to estimate how much he would bring in is probably a little bit of a black box, because it's not like you can go to Japan and start having those conversations absent a deal with Shohei Ohtani. So you're still guesstimating what that revenue might look like. I think that the total contract could easily be over $500 million. I wouldn't be surprised if it's over $550. Like, I could see a case for signing him at $600.
So if it's $500 million, like, there's just a large collection of teams in baseball that will not even enter that conversation. So already, like, you've got it whittled down to, I don't know, 12 teams or so. And, you know, it's the ones you mentioned, right? Like Dodgers, Rangers, Cubs, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Giants. Now, teams like the Mets and Yankees have the resources, certainly. It's questionable about their willingness right now. Like, they haven't seemed particularly willing to sign a Shohei Ohtani. It doesn't seem like that's what they want to do right now in their cycle, or, you know, in what they want to spend. You could probably lump, like, the Astros in there, the Phillies as well. Like, those are franchises that certainly have spent a ton of money. The Nationals as well, like, have spent a ton of money on free agents, on their own players in the past, but don't seem to have that willingness at this time. So really, like, you very quickly get down to a quite short list, of which the Blue Jays are one of the teams, like, are one of the suitors, like, one of the teams that has the resources, has the willingness. We just spoke to Ross Atkins yesterday. You, I, the rest of the Baseball Writers Association of America Toronto chapter, like, Ross talked to us, and he talked about the Blue Jays' flexibility, their nimbleness, their ability to bring concepts and pitches to ownership. And that includes Shohei Ohtani. And this, by the way, like, is not the first time the Blue Jays have been involved on, like, one of the top names on the free agent market that is going to sign, like, a deal in excess of $300 million. They're involved on Corey Seager. They're involved on Gerrit Cole. Like, those things didn't get to the finish line. Those things maybe... Bryce Harper. Those things maybe weren't particularly realistic, but... like, those are conversations that the Blue Jays had. Freddie Freeman, like, the Freddie Freeman stuff was real and legitimate. Like, the Blue Jays went down that road with him. So they have the ability, they have the resources, the willingness. Like, they are in a win now posture right now. They are trying to win a World Series in 2024. They are trying to consolidate as much talent as possible on their roster today, currently. So, like, absolutely, the Blue Jays are in this discussion. It's just going to be about, okay, what does Shohei Ohtani want? What does he value? How can we service that for him? Like, how can we present that to him and make ourselves as appealing as possible to him? And then how do we satisfy kind of what the structure of this contract looks like in terms of term, years, opt-outs, perks, like, all the kind of stuff that I saw you write about at sportsnet.ca in terms of, like, his say in terms of coaching decisions and staffing decisions. There's gonna be all kinds of stuff about, like, what his life looks like at the ballpark, how much media he does, what his life looks like on the road, what, like, type of promotional stuff he's involved in. Like, all that stuff is going to be written into the contract, and all that stuff is going to be tailored to him to make him as happy as possible. That's how this process plays out. And then you bring it to ownership, and then ultimately Rogers Communications, which owns the Blue Jays, owns Sportsnet, everybody knows this, is going to make the decision on that. And it's going to be a yes or a no. And so it's, like, entirely realistic that Shohei Ohtani could be a Toronto Blue Jay.
Yeah, I think it's on the table. And I think, you know, in talking to Ross Atkins about this yesterday, and so he was asked about Shohei Ohtani. He kept his answers general. And there were other times that he was asked about recruiting in general terms, top players to the city of Toronto. Again, he kept his answers general. But never in the course of those answers did he do anything to dissuade us from the notion that the Blue Jays could compete for a top talent such as Shohei Ohtani. Like, I mean, there could have been moments there where he might have hedged or say, you know, we all have limits, or we have to be mindful of our resources. And, you know, there are endless ways to hint to the public that maybe you're not in to those top, top levels. And Atkins didn't say that. So that's reading between the lines, and we're doing a lot of reading between the lines on this stuff because Ohtani's camp has played things very close to the vest. They're not out there, his representatives at CAA Sports, they're not out there, you know, giving descriptions of what's happening, understandably so. But that leaves us on the outside kind of wondering what this process might look like. And if I'm the Blue Jays, I am using the chance, if you do get a chance to sit down with Shohei Ohtani, which we're not sure if they're going to have that chance. But if you do get that chance, then I think you need to take advantage of that to show him how much you care about his well-being and how much you're committed to winning. But, you know, the winning part, to some extent, that's the roster. It's the win-loss record. It's the fact that you're bidding for him in the first place. All those things point to a commitment to winning. But I think that beyond that, you want to show him that you're kind of tuned into him, not just as an athlete, but as a person. And the athlete part, hey, like we know that Shohei Ohtani, he's got a bit of a nerdy side. Like the complex in Dunedin, Florida, that can probably be really appealing to him when it comes to getting the most out of his body and getting the most out of the resources that the Blue Jays have. Playing in a dome stadium, that can help him. A diverse city like Toronto might be appealing to him. But I think even the fact that he's played at the same high school as Yusei Kikuchi in rural Japan growing up, wore the same number, maybe have Yusei Kikuchi narrate it, right? Like, don't have Ross Atkins narrate it. No disrespect to him or John Schneider or Bo Bichette or anyone else that you might consider for those things. Have Kikuchi do it in Japanese. Maybe find out what his favorite music is. Like, maybe get a CGI of Ohtani as a Toronto Blue Jay hitting a big home run at Rogers Center. Like, these are the kinds of things that I think can... And they've made video pitches like this before. This is the kind of thing that you want to show to Shohei Ohtani to say, like, we actually want you. We have this vision of you. And it's not just about us and how it would benefit us, but it's also about how they understand Shohei Ohtani as a person.
And, you know, like, self-improvement is something that we know is important to Shohei, and like taking care of his body and routine. And a lot of these things are like things that he really values. And like, you know, like you said, he's a pretty private dude, and he's, you know, he's not out there, you know, exactly explicitly telling everybody, you know, what he values and what he's looking for. But yeah, the sense you get is that he wants to win, and he wants to be somewhere where he's going to have the resources to continue to get better and to live, eat, train in the way that he wants to. Now, like, I'm not trying to present myself as somebody who has a tremendous amount of insight into Shohei Ohtani today. But I did spend some time around him before he ever came over to MLB in 16 or 17. I went to see him in Japan, and I wrote a Sportsnet magazine story on him. For listeners, a magazine is this printed product that they used to have in the Stone Ages, in which there would be words in print. It's pretty incredible. You can look it up at a library. But so I went over, and I spent several days with Shohei, and I saw his routine firsthand. And look, this was like 6-7 years ago at this point. This is before he ever even was, this like 2 years before he was even posted by the Nippon Ham Fighters. And even at that point, like, he was somebody who was very intentional, very deliberate, and very involved in the way that he trained, the way they took care of his body, the way that he ate. Like, a lot of what we talked about, him and I, were just about the new training methodologies that he was just starting to learn, because at that point he was like very early 20s, and he was even showing the Ham Fighters some things, like, that their strength people, like, talking to their trainers and to their conditioning folks, they were like, we learn from Shohei. Like, he brings stuff to the table that he wants to be doing, and he wants us to incorporate into his plan. When I saw him, like, it was the off season. It was winter. I remember it was cold when I went out to their training facility, and he was like out on the field doing like a multi-hour routine, like a whole ton of training, both indoors and outdoors, like before he even picked up a bat, before he even went to throw. Like, this is somebody who was at that age, and I'm sure this has only continued since, but at that age, just like very, very involved in the way that he trains. So I think that the Blue Jays having the resources that they have in Dunedin at the player development complex would be something that would appeal to him. I think, again, this is just my opinion based on the time I spent around him like 6 years ago, but I think that the resources the Blue Jays are building out in Toronto at Rogers Center right now would be very important to him. Like, you know, with these renovations, we tend to focus a lot on the seating and the outfield districts and like all that great stuff for fans, and all of that stuff is super and wonderful, but there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes as well to improve facilities and training resources for players. They're redoing the entire clubhouse. The batting cages a couple years ago were completely redone. The weight room's been redone. Like, the Blue Jays' goal is to build out a lot of what they have, a lot of the facilities that they have in Dunedin, in Toronto, at Rogers Center, so the players can utilize that stuff in season. And that's a lot of what's going on with this renovation right now, is really kind of underneath the hood. It's stuff the fans might not ever see, but these are some of the things that were of great importance to Shohei Ohtani when I got to know him several years ago. I would assume they are still of great importance to him. So that is a potential advantage that that the Blue Jays could have as they're recruiting him.
That's all super interesting. And I think like these are the kinds of things that if you're a team that's not named the Los Angeles Dodgers, and even if you are the Dodgers, but you need to take advantage of every bit of information you have. And information in this case is power. It's recruiting power, because if you go in there and just say, hey, Shohei, like, we love you as a player. You know, we'll offer you 500 over 12. We think you'd be an awesome cleanup hitter. Like, great. But there's another layer that you can potentially get to. And I think that all that information is super useful. And it's a way to maybe give yourself an inside edge for a player of this caliber. I also think opt-outs are really going to be important. I think that the opt-outs have a chance to be super interesting in this deal. I think the question of support staff is really interesting. We know his interpreter, Ipe, has kind of a following of his own around the Angels fan base and has worked with Shohei at the WBC with Japan. They appear to be very close. I would think that offering him a contract as well could be something that makes a lot of sense to show Shohei that you're committed not only to, you know, him, but to the people around him, to make sure that he's in a good position. But I did want to ask, Arden, so, you know, looking back at that time that you spent kind of writing that story, that was before he came to Major League Baseball, obviously. And do you remember from that period of time what the Blue Jays' level of interest was in 2017? I mean, that's 6 years ago now. But do you remember any context? Because it was the same front office that they have now.
And they made a pitch to him when he was posted. And I'm sure that included a video, and that probably included, you know, messages from current players. Like we know something about the way the Blue Jays recruit players. Like, it wouldn't be that dissimilar from the way that they tried to recruit like a Freddie Freeman or a Corey Seager. You just tailor it to the individual. So I know the Blue Jays made a pitch. I don't think they were ever a finalist for him at that time. I don't know that, you know, that his priorities at that time really, like, I don't think the Toronto was really somewhere that he took seriously at that time, but I think that now they likely are more so than they were then.
Yeah. I think that, you know, last time he had seven finalists, all of which trained in Arizona, all of which were West Coast teams or Western Division teams, with the exception of the Cubs, which was the lone Central team. There were no East Coast teams in his finalists. It appears this time that he would be open to East Coast teams, which opens the door for clubs like the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. And I think that, you know, we don't know how this process is going to unfold at this point. We don't know if there's going to be an announced group of finalists, or if we're just going to wake up one day to a press release, or, you know, a Ken Rosenthal tweet, or whatever the case, right? We don't know how it's going to unfold. But I think that if there were to be a group of six or seven finalists, I think the Jays would be in that group.
Yeah, 100%. And I shouldn't say that he didn't take Toronto seriously. That's just misspeaking on my part. They did not line up with his preferences at that time with what he was looking for. He definitely takes Toronto seriously. I just think that now his preferences have likely changed. But like some of that stuff that, like, his core values, like some of the stuff that is most important to him, I think that has likely remained consistent. Like, I'll never forget like talking to one of his strength people there in Japan, and they were like, man, like, it's remarkable, like, this guy just, he works out all day and then he goes back to the dorms and he reads about how to work out better tomorrow. Like, that's just where his head was at. This guy is not like, doesn't own a car. Like, at that time he was living like in the dorms with DuPont. Like, he was like literally, like, he didn't have his own place. Like, he lived in the dorms with, you know, the guy that they had just gotten out of like some Japanese high school or whatever. Like, he was just, it was a very meager life, very simple, like very mundane. Like, it's, you know, I assume he's still just like a pretty introverted guy, pretty quiet. You know, there's a reason why you don't see too much of his personality out there. Like, I would imagine the part of like what a team has to pitch him on is like, hey, we're gonna have some pretty serious like curtails on the amount of media that you do. Like, we're gonna, you know, we're not gonna be making a ton of demands for you to be like making appearances and doing promotional stuff and appearing in ads and stuff like that. Like, you just want to focus on baseball. Like, you just want to focus on getting better and doing what you have to do. And by the way, it takes just an absurd amount of dedication and discipline and hard work to do what he's doing. Like, to excel at the level that he is as both a pitcher and a hitter, like, where it's normalized somehow just because we've seen it now for a few years, but it is still like
absolutely incredible what he is doing. He has broken the game of baseball, and he's doing it in a way that no one has ever done it before. And that's not like by accident. He doesn't just roll out of bed and do that. There is a ton of work and focus that goes into that, both from a training standpoint, a conditioning standpoint, from a mental standpoint, from a stress management, fatigue management standpoint, from what he eats, from how he sleeps to how he lives. I mean, this is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week thing in order to be able to perform at the level that he does. So I think that as a team, you absolutely need to like let him know and probably even write it into the contract that like there's going to be some pretty serious limitations on how much we ask of you outside of taking the field for, you know, 162 games a year.
Yeah, that understanding would have to be there. And he's such a unique guy, really. I mean, in so many ways. Even when he was receiving his MVP, you kind of see a little tiny window into his house, but there's no partner with him. There are no parents with him, no siblings. Like, even like Gunnar Henderson, it's like a whole crowd of people around him. And Shohei, it's just him and his dog, you know, and even the background of his house is just very like kind of calm looking. And there's not a lot of detail. There's not a lot of clutter. Even like you look at some of the interviews he's done, like GQ, the 10 things he can't do without. It's like a bat and a ball and a sleep mask. It's like he doesn't reveal a lot of himself necessarily. And that's his prerogative, clearly, and seems to be his preference, obviously works for him. So understanding those things when you're pitching Shohei on a commitment that's going to be very long, like this commitment is going to be a 10-year contract, or maybe teams want to spread the AAV, make it a 13 or 14-year contract. Like, so many ways to do this, but you're talking about a long relationship with someone. And so finding ways to make that as comfortable as possible for him, it has to be a priority for any of these teams that consider themselves serious, including, of course, the Jays.
Yeah, like I said, when we talked, like, we didn't talk about cars, you know, we didn't talk about like watches or, you know, we talked about nutrition. Like, we talked about like the different ways that he prepares his oatmeal, you know, and like swapping out white rice for brown rice and learning about how different carb sources like impacted his energy on a day-to-day basis. Like, he is very nerdy about a lot of that stuff, and I would think you have to be in order to be the kind of athlete that he is. When you mention like a 10-year, you know, decade-long commitment, when you mention a partnership, like the still like incredible amount of money that this is going to take, right? We're talking about $500 million here. How do you think about like the risk that will be inherent here for whatever team ends up signing Shohei Ohtani and committing that much money to a guy who is doing something that has never been done before, for which there is no past precedent and there are no historical comps, and somebody who is going to be coming off of a fairly significant surgery?
Well, the risk is there. There's no question about that. And that's part of it. I think at the same time, even if he doesn't ever pitch again, which, you know, we all expect that he'll be able to pitch at some point in 2025. And continue to be potentially a frontline starting pitcher. I mean, Aaron Nola got $172 million. Like, Shohei Ohtani, when he's on the mound, is every bit the pitcher that Aaron Nola is, or every bit the pitcher that Blake Snell is. And Snell's probably getting $200. So, you know, I think that there's value there as a pitcher. There's value there as a position player. But even if he were never to pitch again, then I think his floor is kind of a left-handed Mookie Betts. And obviously the floor is below that because he could, you know, he could miss time due to injury. There are catastrophe situations that, you know, exist for any free agent. That's obviously a possibility that no one wants to think about. But if he's healthy as a hitter, we've seen proof of concept year after year. He hits the ball, he impacts the ball incredibly hard. He does that really consistently and has a great swing that creates a lot of home runs. And he's extremely fast, so he's going to be able to turn doubles into triples and singles into doubles and steal some bases. If he had to be an outfielder, I have no doubt that Shohei Ohtani could be an above average right fielder tomorrow. And I wouldn't be surprised if Shohei Ohtani could play center field at a league average level for probably 2 or 3 years out of a 10-year or 12-year contract before moving to right or left and making a huge difference with his arm from a corner. So I think if your floor is Mookie Betts, and Mookie Betts is a $400 million player, and he also has the upside of like being a $200 million pitcher, I mean, that's where you start to look at $500 million and you're kind of like, all right, this is actually sort of reasonable. And that's where, in my mind, you could even push things to six. But, you know, probably, you know, six is a lot. But I see the risk, but I see the reward at the same time. And that's before we even get to the business side.
Yeah, you're going to have to stomach a sizable amount of risk here, I think, because there is just so much uncertainty about what his pitching future looks like. And like you said, like if he's just a hitter, okay, yeah, $400 million is reasonable. But if you're, you know, dishing out $500, $550, you're expecting that he's going to pitch at some point.
Yep.
Like you're paying for some pitching there. And this is, he's coming off of a second elbow injury. He definitely had Tommy John earlier in his career. I don't know that we've actually heard what the actual specific procedure is he had, right, at the end of the year. So there's a number of different things you can do to address a UCL tear, which he definitely had. We don't know for certain that it was a second Tommy John, right? So
yep.
We're at least, I'm just going to say he's had two elbow procedures, and
two
it's
significant,
like,
elbows.
Yeah. Two significant elbow procedures. And like, look, it's impossible to predict like injuries. Like there's so little research on this, because like, when you think about it, like what, you can't run like a randomized control trial where you know, recruit 30 subjects and you're like, hey, we're going to snip your UCLs, right? So there's just so little reliable data on like how athletes recover, how it impacts them going forward, what it means for them. Like it's all case study, right? So you can't even feel like that certain about how you would project how this will impact him in the future, like how this could impact him as a hitter. If he comes back to pitching, what that could look like, whether he's a starter, whether he's a reliever, whether he's a closer, like how that all works. Like you're basing it on like past, you know, case studies, when really with Shohei Ohtani, there are no past case studies because nobody's ever tried to do what he's doing. Like you can look at how people who have had two significant elbow operations in the past have recovered, but those are all going to be pitchers. Those aren't going to be guys who have gone out and taken 600 plate appearances as well and hit the ball as hard as he does. And now you're even bringing in him possibly being an outfielder and putting that kind of stress on his arm. Like there is so much uncertainty there and there's so much risk there that you have to stomach. You do it because it's Shohei Ohtani. If there was ever a time to take on a great amount of risk, like this is the athlete, this is the person, this is the player, this is the instance. But I do think it is worth like saying there is risk here. Like it's not just a slam dunk that you sign Shohei Ohtani and like everything is roses. Like there is certainly some risk, certainly some uncertainty going forward.
Exactly. And look, if you want to be the Rays and never take on big amounts of risk, like you can win a lot of games and you can have a successful franchise and be the Brewers or be the Rays and just never wade in these waters. And yeah, like you can win that way. But you're going to give yourself a big advantage if you can sometimes take on big amounts of risk and open yourself up to huge amounts of reward as well. And the Blue Jays, as a big market team, have done that in recent years. Clearly, you know, based on Ross Atkins' comments, they can be nimble, they can spend, they can be flexible when it comes to their payroll. I read that, this is just me, my personal interpretation, I read that as if we need to, we can spend $500 million on Shohei Ohtani and still surround him with a good team. So I might be very wrong in that, but I don't think I am. I think that's like what that read is. And so if you can take on that risk, you know, we talk all the time about character and, you know, good person, good people. To the extent that we know anything about Shohei Ohtani, he definitely seems to be a guy who is going to be motivated, who is going to be focused, who is not going to have undue distractions, who is going to be a good teammate. To the extent that those things matter, like, and they do if you're talking about a $500 million investment, like, I think that you can be pretty confident in the person. And then, yeah, there's risk on the physical toll that this stuff can take. But I think the floor is still a $400 million player. And look, if, you know, end of the day, if Willie Mays was a free agent, if Babe Ruth was a free agent, like if Ricky Henderson was a free agent, like sometimes you just run into a historic player. And yeah, signing those guys and taking on some risk, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I don't think that they're, you know, the Blue Jays front office will not be the reason this does not happen. It'll be like, this is up to Shohei Ohtani and ownership. Like that's basically what it comes down to. I think like any front office can easily make the decision of, yes, we will sign the generational talent, best player that we've ever seen, like literal unicorn that does things that have never been done before. And we will sign him to a contract for which there is no precedent. Like, I just think that, and even considering the risk and uncertainty and everything, like, there's no need to overcomplicate it. It's Shohei Ohtani. If you have the opportunity to sign him, you try to sign him.
And it doesn't have to make sense by dollars per war. Sometimes it's just get the player. And there are business opportunities. There's also the roster impact that this has. He takes up one roster spot. He's two players. You've also got the fact that the moment whoever signs Shohei Ohtani, the moment they sign Shohei Ohtani, they just became a way more attractive destination for second and third tier free agents. Because if you're like on the fence, I'm a infielder who's going to get 400 or 500 plate appearances. I could either sign with like the Twins or I can play on Shohei Ohtani's team. Like, I think I'd rather play with Shohei Ohtani.
I am going to agree with that. And with that, we should step away because we just talked for a very long time about a guy who may very well not be a Toronto Blue Jay.
Future Dodger. Future Dodger.
Yeah, we just talked for a long time about future Ranger Shohei Ohtani. But there are other players who may and will become Toronto Blue Jays between now and opening day. We should probably talk about some of them. All that and so much more when we continue on At The Letters.
Listen to At The Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Our producer is Christian Ryan. Ben, the way that this MLB offseason is playing out, there's kind of like the Shohei stratosphere up top where, you know, as we mentioned, there are like five or six teams, of which the Blue Jays are one of them, interacting with, maybe the best baseball player that we have ever seen and ever will see. And then there's everything that's like sub-Shohei, which includes plenty of other players who Ben may or may not have denigrated on the first half of this podcast, and plenty of other opportunities to get better if you're a team that's trying to win in 2024 and beyond. So in the sub-Shohei stratosphere, Ben, where do you think some of the more like interesting opportunities and areas are for the Blue Jays as they try to build for the coming season?
Yeah, it's interesting. And this is where, like, I actually had this thought today where, you know, we talked for 30 plus minutes about Shohei Ohtani, and the front offices who are engaged on that player are presumably devoting a lot of resources there. And I wondered, like, you know, for a team like the Rays that just doesn't engage on Shohei, does this actually give them an advantage? Because then all of their energy just goes to different players, you know, like the lower tier. But anyways, I do think that the Blue Jays do have to operate on two fronts because there's a likelihood that they're not going to land Ohtani, and that means that they have to be prepared on all these other players. And I think that includes Bellinger, Yamamoto, Soto. You know, those players all make sense for the Blue Jays. It sounds like the Blue Jays believe they have enough in their farm system to pull off a significant trade, and clearly they have the resources to spend on the right player. So, you know, we can dive in on any of those names and go right down the list, but the Blue Jays do have interest to some extent in Bellinger, Soto, Yamamoto. Soto, I'm actually not 100% sure on, but on Yamamoto, they definitely do have interest, and on Bellinger, they definitely do have interest. And, you know, beyond that, well, I would speculate that they've had interest in Soto.
Eventually in 10 innings, and again, Soto the other way against Walker, and again, he gets him! New career high, 35th of the year for Soto. His second of the night.
Well, then let's talk about Yoshinobu Yamamoto, because that's an, you know, like Bellinger, that makes sense. Obviously, Blue Jays were interested in him last offseason. It scans that they'd be interested in him again this offseason. Soto, of course, there's going to be interest there. Incredibly impactful talent. You know, Ross Atkins told us yesterday that there was a willingness to take on players with only 1 year of club control remaining. Soto obviously qualifies, but Yamamoto is a pitcher. And the Blue Jays would appear to have quite a crowded pitching staff right now. They're essentially returning all of what was the best staff in baseball last season. A like well built out rotation with like veterans and players that you believe you can count on. You've got Alek Manoah looking to bounce back, and you know, I'd say right now he is very well positioned to be the quote unquote number five in this rotation. But you've also got like internal options from, you know, a Bowden Francis and a Wes Parsons, a Mitch White who's out of options. You got a absolutely like very crowded bullpen. Chad Green is coming back. You know, you don't really have a ton of like optionable types in the bullpen, which is kind of like an interesting thing that the Blue Jays may need to address. So like, how would a Yamamoto, who by all accounts is going to cost you like $200+ million, fit on this pitching staff?
Yeah, it's really interesting because also Shadavidi, our colleague, reported this week that Ross Atkins saw him in person in Japan. So that certainly reflects some serious level of interest in Yamamoto. As you'd expect, I mean, the guy's 25 years old. He has elite home run suppression. He's won all kinds of awards in Japan with great results. Of course, you want this guy on your team. I mean, you think back to Masahiro Tanaka. Maybe this is a pitcher along those lines, comparable age coming over. Obviously, Tanaka, I think, was 156. That was years ago. So $200 million certainly within range for Yamamoto. Now, I ultimately think that Yamamoto is more likely to go to the Yankees, Mets, Giants, or Dodgers. However, the Blue Jays do seem to have some real interest there. And in this scenario that they were to land him, you're probably trading Alek Manoah, a player about whom they've already had trade talks this month. I'm not under the impression that anything's really gained traction, but have been some talks there. Not a shock because teams do their diligence this time of year. But I think at that point you're either trading, Kikuchi maybe, or more likely Alek Manoah if you do land Yamamoto. But to me, I see them honestly, like, I don't know where you see this, Arden, but to me, I actually see Ohtani as more likely than Yamamoto.
Yeah, the Yamamoto thing, like, I just have a hard time fitting that with the Blue Jays and where they're at right now. Like, it's hard for me to imagine them coming off of this season in which they pitched superlatively and really had a hard time like converting hitting into runs, because like the misnomer about the Blue Jays is that they didn't hit in 2023. Well, no, like they hit, they just didn't convert that into runs. Like, they really didn't slug, but they hit plenty, WRC plus and like well above league average. Like, all these numbers support what they're able to do at the plate. They just weren't able to convert that into runs, maddeningly, in really big situations when they needed to. So it's hard for me to imagine that they then come back in 2023 with, well, okay, we're gonna drop like $200+ million on another pitcher and not spread out the money that we have available to help our offense and to add some more thump and to add some more producers in our lineup when that is what we so sorely needed last season.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where, you know, this is a front office that does its diligence. They will check on hundreds or at least dozens, like approaching 100 names with some real degree of interest this offseason. And like, this is for a team that has a 40-man roster, right? So you can do the math. They're not acquiring most of the vast majority of players that they check on, and even the players that they show some degree of serious interest in. End of the day, the Blue Jays are acquiring like 5 players this offseason. If you look back at the offseason, like last offseason, the one before that, they end up with like 5 players. And some of those players are more like, you know, bottom of the roster, and a few of those players are higher impact. So yeah, that's probably what we're looking at this year. And I agree with you that it's probably not focused on the pitching side. I think it's more likely to be on the hitting side. And, you know, Bellinger, I think, is interesting, but I don't know where you see his market. I see his market as like $200 million+, and I do not see the Blue Jays spending that.
Yeah, I think that, well, I don't know, 6-150 for Bellinger, maybe. Like, does it have to be 200?
I think if you can get him for 6-150, do it today. And I just like that south of the Nimmo contract. I think he's like pretty clearly a better player than Nimmo. And
I mean, can you just write off what happened towards the end of his Dodgers tenure like that?
I think given how well he bounced back, like I'd definitely Brandon Nimmo's never gonna hit 35 homers. Like, I think, you know, Bellinger, when you look at the defense, the speed, the youth, the fact he's just 28 years old, you know, obviously his 30 homer power, I personally would believe that he's going to get $200+ million from someone like the Yankees, Giants, or Cubs, would be my guess.
Deep drive to right. This ball back to the wall. It's got a chance. Gone. Cody Bellinger with a home run. Cubs lead 3-0.
He is certainly a bright and shiny object that is available in the free agent market. And there are a few of those bright, shiny objects, right? There's him, there's Shohei through trade, there's Juan Soto. You know, if you're looking for pitching, I think, you know, Blake Snell would qualify there. Like, there are definitely some, like, really high-priced, really impactful players available. This is just somewhat the way that I'm wired, but, like, when I look at this off season and, like, what the Blue Jays could do with the resources that they have available, like, I keep coming back to just spreading it around a bit and trying to, you know, not just, like, concentrating all of my resources into one or two players, but, like, taking some intelligent bets on, like, a bunch of different players. And, like, part of that could be a return of Matt Chapman on a deal that is, like, paying him, like, I don't know, $20 to $25 million a year over 5 to 6 years, right? And that could be your, like, splashy move. So there's third base taken care of. Then you look around the rest of the diamond at, like, second base, and it's like, you know, we'll take a bet on Ahmed Rosario. You know, left field, let's grab, like, Jock Peterson for the bat and Harrison Bader for the defense, or Michael A. Taylor for the defense, and figure it out there. And then look to DH to take a bet on, like, a Rhys Hoskins or a Mitch Garver or somebody, you know, Jorge Soler would probably be priced out at that point. Like, so, you know, Carlos Santana, Justin Turner, like, somebody who's kind of bat first is going to play, like, 120 games at DH and then maybe 20 games at an actual position, and just kind of spread it out and do it that way. I keep coming back to that maybe being a better outcome for the Blue Jays, like, in the realistic tier. Obviously, the Shohei Ohtani outcome is the best possible outcome. Obviously, Bellinger would be a great outcome. But in terms of, like, what's likely to happen and what's realistic, I keep coming back to just kind of spreading it out to a bunch of kind of 1 to 3 win players and going forward from there.
Yeah, and I think so in that scenario, because with Chapman, I almost separate him from, like, from the category of, like, spread it around, because in this market, Chapman's, like, kind of one of the elite players. I know Jays fans might not view him that way just because he didn't hit for the last five or for four of the last 5 months of the season. He was good in July. But I think that with Chapman, his market's really interesting too, because he's on that list of players where it's like Giants, Dodgers, Yankees, Cubs. You know, they're all kind of fighting for, and Blue Jays obviously in this mix as well, fighting for some of these same players. And Chapman, his market could move in a lot of different directions. I don't think his market is as strong as Bellinger's. I think that there are some fits, like the Giants, that make a lot of sense, and the Blue Jays that make some sense. But you'll talk to other people, and I've heard from some folks who think, like, you know, his market's not super clear beyond some of those teams. So, you know, if the Blue Jays could get him for 4 or 5 years, to me, that's really interesting. If I'm the Jays, I don't think I would go to a sixth year, but you could make a case that you might have to. And that might be what he ends up getting from a team like the Giants.
Yeah, I'm looking at him as like 5-125 or 6-150. Like, that sort of situation, right? Does that scan with you?
That does scan. Like, to me, Chapman at 525, I'm kind of like, yeah, that's a pretty good deal for the team. Chapman at 5-150, I'm like, oh, it's a good deal for Chapman, which isn't a bad thing. Like, you want, Chapman should get paid. Like, you know, good for him. He had a great season, or not a great season, but he's
some
been
would
a
dispute
very,
that.
Yeah, I myself would dispute that as soon as I heard myself say it. But I think he's a very, very good major league player, and he continues to project as a very good major league player. So, you know, 6-150, if he signs with the Giants, I'll be like, yeah, win-win deal. But I don't know, if it's on the Jays, like, I think you got to be conscious of the back end of those deals, as we're seeing with the latest 6-150 that they signed, the only other 6-150 in franchise history, where George Springer on the back half of his deal, you know, it's not the most exciting 3 years coming up. Based on what we saw this past year, it's more good than great.
With Chapman, like, it's that classic thing where when you watch a player every day over 6 months, like, the warts become a lot more apparent. and you kind of lose the forest for the trees. But when you just, like, if Matt Chapman, like, had finished out his career with the Oakland Athletics, which, like, never would happen because that's not how the Oakland Athletics do business, but say that he had, and he hit free agency, and he's coming off of this 3.5 win season in which he had, like, a 110 WRC plus, and he had, you know, puzzlingly like low homer year compared to where he'd been prior in his career, but still had all the hard hit data, like the exit velos, you know, the way that he strikes the ball was all consistent. You know, you could point at the spray chart and say, hey, look at this 404 foot fly ball that didn't go out, and this 402 one, and this 405 one, and yeah, he was, you know, the expected numbers tell us that he was unlucky for the quality of contact that he made. Strikeout rate is like right where it's been for, you know, the last couple of years, actually down from earlier in his career. The walk rate's still there, pitch selection's still there. I think that, and the defense, by the way, like, still very, very good at third base. I think a lot of fans would be a lot more excited about the potential of signing a Matt Chapman if he had hit the market from another team and they hadn't watched him every day and they hadn't just seen like the context of the season that he just had, which, yes, like, was frustrating. And yes, there, you know, was that incredible April and then, you know, 4.5 months that followed it that were underwhelming. And there was, you know, an injury in there that he tried to play through and that didn't help him at all. And like, yeah, like those things are real and those things happen. But I think that when you just pull out and you look at who he is as a player, it's like, yeah, he hits the ball really, really hard and, you know, has a lot of power, makes good swing decisions, doesn't chase a lot, strikes out at a pretty high clip, but also walks at a decent clip, has that profile that's going to be inherently streaky just because of how he produces. But in the end, comes around to being like a 110 to 115 WRC plus player with really strong defense at third base who is worth like 3 to 4 wins. I think that's a good player. And I think that's a guy who is worth $25 million a year over 5 years. So if the Blue Jays made that deal with him, I don't think I would poo-poo it. I think I would say, yeah, like, that's a fair deal. That's a good deal. The Blue Jays are, and also, by the way, the Blue Jays understanding who he is as a character guy, as a part of their culture, as a part of their clubhouse, which is all stuff that matters. And his just having that familiarity with how he works and how he fits into the organization. I think for all those reasons, if the Blue Jays brought back Matt Chapman, I'd be like, yeah, it's a good deal.
At 5-1-25 for sure. If they do it at 6-1-50.
Yeah, that's to me, it's like, I don't know, man. We might all be dead by then. Whatever. Like, it's what's one more year, right? Like, ultimately, like, the Blue Jays have this 2-year window right now where they need to be doing everything they possibly can to win. And if that's what it takes to make themselves really good now, like, you are always factoring in like some, like, a bill that's going to be due in these deals. When they signed George Springer, you knew that the last couple of years of that deal weren't going to look great. I'm sure we talked about it in the podcast when they signed him. Same thing with like when they signed Russell Martin, when they signed Hyunjin Ryu. Like, there is always a bit of interest that comes due towards the end of these deals, and you just kind of stomach that and you deal with it when you get there. Like, 6 years from now, Ben, like, we're talking about a what, 2030 season at that point?
Yeah.
Like, do Blue Jays have any commitments for 2030 right now?
Rios, probably.
Right, but he might opt out after 2 years, right? So even if they do have Barrios for 2030, like, they can stomach that. They can be a high payroll team. Like, they can be okay. They can, like, they can make bets like this.
Yeah, they can. They can. For me, with Chapman, I do 5-1-25. I'd probably step away if it got to 6-1-50. I'd probably say, we wish you the best of luck in San Francisco.
Jamer Candelario, you are a Toronto Blue Jay.
And it's Jamer o'clock, and we're going to him. And yeah, it's like 28-2 for Candelario, you know.
Right. And you might get 2 wins out of Candelario instead of the 3.5 you would have gotten out of Chapman.
Absolutely. Like, there's a he's a worse player. No, there's no debate. He is a worse player than Matt Chapman. And I think this is where you get to the question, right, of like spreading it around. And I generally like that idea. And I think obviously plan A is Shohei Ohtani. That is the best outcome. But I do think that there are lots of scenarios where the Blue Jays do end up spreading it around. And, like, you know, if you can sign, like, to me, the realistic good outcome for this team is they sign Rhys Hoskins, who he's a Boras client. He's not going back to the Phillies. Sign Rhys Hoskins for 2 years. Give him an opt out after one if he wants. Like, do what, like, get the player. Do go out there and get him. Give him a good deal. That's a player friendly deal. But Rhys Hoskins is a good player. I would say do that. 2 year deal, opt out after one, total guarantee $35 million, something like that. Get Ahmed Rosario as a bench piece. Trade Espinal. Get Willy Adames in there. Maybe find a way to round out your outfield somehow. I mean, definitely you need to add some outfield help. Maybe that's Kevin Kiermaier. I mean, you start adding up the money. It's like it gets to 40, 45, 50 million pretty quick. And that's the amount of money that it seems the Blue Jays have to spend barring an Ohtani deal. So it would require some level of creativity there. But I think Kiermaier should be on the table. I really like Rhys Hoskins. I really think Willy Adames is a trade candidate. Makes tons of sense. But, you know, obviously in the trade market, you start with Soto. I mean, I'm sure they have, I'm speculating that they have had talks with San Diego about Soto. And so, you know, you see if there's a fit there. But if you can spread it around in the right ways, there are a lot of good players out there. They're just not maybe the caliber of a Bellinger on a ceiling basis.
I do like the opportunity that the Blue Jays have, and like Ross Atkins has mentioned this specifically, to take on like a full-time DH type or even just a very primary DH type. Like, so Hoskins, who you mentioned, would qualify as that. Like, yep. How much do you want Rhys Hoskins playing the field next year if you're signing him? Yeah. 20 to 30 games?
Yeah, whenever tops. Vladdy needs a break.
Yeah, that's essentially it. And there's like, you could do that with, it makes it really like the most interesting kind of position the Blue Jays are filling this offseason, just for me as like a weirdo who's interested in weird things, because there are a lot of different players who you could go to there. Hoskins makes a lot of sense. Mitch Garver, to me, would be really interesting on a like a similar kind of short term. You know, I don't think it would be 1 year with Garver. It'd probably be 2 or 3. But as a primary DH, get him out from behind the plate all the time. Hopefully he stays healthier. Try to tap into like that big power that he's shown. Great plate discipline, high on base. And he's there to spell at catcher if you need him to. If you're going, you know, Jansen Kirk next year, and say Danny Jansen has like the annual sort of mid-June, you know, foul ball that goes off of his hand and causes him to miss 6 weeks, unfortunately. Well, you don't have to ride Kirk quite as aggressively, or you don't have to use quite as much of Tyler Heineman. You can throw Mitch Garver back there from time to time, get Kirk off of his feet, you know, have Garver's bat in the lineup. You know, that makes some sense to me, man. Like, Michael Brantley is interesting to me as a guy who, like, when he's healthy, like, has always hit and always been Michael Brantley. So if you can just DH him primarily, get him off his feet more often, use some of all your facilities and your sports science folks and all the resources that you have in order to keep him healthier and keep him fresher, man, that's a guy that'd make a lot of sense as, like, 110 games at DH and 20 games and left. Justin Turner.
That's a lot of games for Michael Brantley.
20 though. Games? 20 games back?
No. I mean, 130 total.
Like, I'm trying, because I'm keeping him healthier.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, like, he's been a great hitter. To me, Michael Brantley is, like, almost minor league deal territory.
No way, Ben. That's crazy. That's an insult to Michael Brantley. Minor league deal territory? No.
Is it 1 year, like $3 million? Like, it's
no, it's like 1 year, like $9.5 million, dude. It's the Brandon Belt deal.
I wouldn't go that high.
That is insulting to Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley's not signing a minor league deal, dude.
Man, you knew that some players were going to catch strays from me before this one ended, and Michael Brantley just didn't know what was coming. Sorry, Michael, if you're listening. I will say,
Joey Votto is aggressive, but like, say, you're about to say Joey Votto. All right, I will say maybe 130 is aggressive, but like 110 games from Brantley, 90 of them at DH, 20 of them in the field. Like, coming into this year, would you have said that Brandon Belt was going to make over 400 plate appearances? Or are you going to say he's probably going to be injured?
You know what I was saying about Brandon Belt at the start of this year, and it wasn't very nice.
You said about Brandon Belt.
It was, and look, hey, you know what? Brandon Belt had a great season. He had a way better season than I ever would have predicted when I watched him in April, because my first extended look at Brandon Belt was like, this guy's washed. And I really believe that. And then he proved to be one of their better hitters. So, yeah.
2-0. hit high and deep out to right field. You can forget it. That ball's long gone. What a key cog coming down the stretch for the Blue Jays. Brandon Belt delivers number 19 on the season.
And as a guy who was coming off of a couple of injury like ravaged years, right, who had had, you know, surgeries on his knee, and there was a lot of question marks about his health, and the Blue Jays found a way to keep him healthy, to really use him in an optimal way, right, like really hit him from lefties effectively, used and just like got the best out of him. I could see a similar deal with Michael Brantley at a similar age, coming off of a couple of similarly challenging seasons in which, when he was healthy and when he was on the field, he was himself and didn't, you know, show that many signs of degradation as a hitter.
$12 million last year for Brantley. So yeah, somewhere under that, obviously. I mean,
nine.
Oh man.
Give him the belt deal. 1 year, 9.3 or whatever it was.
I wouldn't do it personally. But you know, where do you land on Votto? Because I'm intrigued by Votto, but again, like, you can make some of the same plus minus cases on Votto that you could for a guy like Brantley. And I think, you know, as much as we, I don't mean you, but I mean we collectively get intrigued by Votto and excited because he's Canadian and because he's kind of a quirky dude, you know, end of the day, the player is probably not so dissimilar from someone like a Michael Brantley. So then, you know, you can make the same case for him that he probably is, you know, maybe it's more like a $3 million than like a $10 million commitment.
You think about how old Michael Brantley feels. Michael Brantley's 4 years younger than Joey Votto.
Yeah.
So, and he's coming off of, I mean, when on the field, more productive years than Joey Votto. So I like Brantley more than Votto. Like, you can't tell me that Brantley's signing a minor league deal and Votto's signing a major league deal.
I mean, if
Brantley's 4 years younger and coming off of better years.
Put it this way, I won't be surprised if either one of them signs a minor league deal.
That is one way of putting it. But so yeah, I would look at Hoskins, Brantley, Garver in that role. Carlos Santana, Justin Turner, you know, those would be interesting guys. I'm also kind of interested in how they settle the outfield. Because look, Dalton Varsho is going to play center field as things stand right now, unless they bring back Kevin Kiermaier, but I don't really expect that they're going to. Like, no, I just think that the bidding there will just, it'll get beyond the value the Blue Jays are comfortable with.
Especially if the Yankees miss on Bellinger. Like, if Bellinger goes to the Giants, the Yankees are sitting there. Maybe they get Soto. They still want someone to put between Judge and Soto in the center field. And if they miss on Soto, all the more reason to go out there and get Kiermaier with Bader hitting free agency. I think Kiermaier is going to be a Yankee, but we'll see.
So then I like kind of pairing a, you know, Peterson Bader or Peterson Taylor is kind of like, you know, bat first, defense first.
Yeah.
In the outfield to play left, right? With Varsho playing essentially every day in center field or mostly every day in center field. If you get Bader or Taylor, like, those guys can spell Varsho in center every now and then. Like Jung Hoo Lee, another guy who kind of interests me, coming over from KBO with, you know, pretty elite contact rates, like, doesn't strike out a lot. Some pretty serious questions about how the power is going to transfer, how much power there will be there, but by all reports, like, a pretty strong defender, and still very young as well. So somebody who, like, maybe he's a little too much of a project right now for the Blue Jays, where they're like, you're trying to win in 2024 and you're trying to win in 2025, and maybe you don't have time to, like, ride out that Ha-Seong Kim arc where it's like the first year he's adjusting and acclimating, getting used to it, and it's a little dicey, and then, like, you know, 2.5-3 years into the tenure, oh, okay, this guy's actually really good now and, like, has figured it out and has, you know, grown into who he can be in MLB. I don't know if the Blue Jays have that kind of runway for a guy like Jung Hoo Lee, but he is a really interesting option in the outfield for me as well.
Yeah, I like that fit a lot. I think it's a fair point to say that, you know, there's some uncertainty there as far as what that on-ramping looks like, in a way that even for Yamamoto, you know, we've seen so many pitchers transition from Japan so smoothly that there's a pretty high degree of confidence that with both him and Imanaga that they're going to be good major league pitchers in 2024. Now, is that Cy Young level or is that just like number four starter? TBD, but they're going to be good pitchers. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting play. I mean, it's probably an ideal fit for, like, the Tigers, or, you know, a team that's trying to ramp up, and or the Nationals, a team that might be a couple years away from contention. But I still think that makes sense for the Blue Jays to have some interest there. I think he's viewed as a really good defensive player as well. So that can help them out, because as much as they need to add offense, you can't get away from defense. And I think this is where, for me, like Shai reported some interest in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Ahmed Rosario, to me, makes a ton of sense for this team as someone who could help defensively and offensively. I think you got to keep that in mind as you're making these calls this winter.
Yeah, Rosario for second base makes sense. If you know none of those aforementioned outfield options work out, I just want to make it clear, I'd prioritize all the guys I said before over this. I mean, you could do worse than Adam Duvall.
Yeah.
In a role where, like, you know, we're using you, like, you know, sparingly, but like this is a guy who has been productive and he's a veteran and he's shown that he can still get it done at the big league level. And yep, he's going to strike out a lot, but he's also going to run into a bunch and probably hit you 22 homers and probably be worth like a win and a half. That's where if you're getting that on like, you know, 1 year, $6.5 million, there's value there.
100%. I mean, there are a lot of guys like that. As far as filling out the DH spot, it's not going to be hard. There are going to be ways to fill out the DH spot. So I think the two positions that the Blue Jays have to fill externally are third base and outfield in some capacity, because opening day 2024, there's no one to play third base. I mean, I'm considering Chapman at this point an external candidate. And yeah, you're not going to want Kevin Biggio out there for like 130 games. You're not going to count on Aurelvis Martinez or Addison Barger to break camp. You need someone from outside at third base, and you need someone from outside to help Dalton Varsho patrol either left or center or both, some combination. You need an outfielder. You absolutely need a third baseman. I personally think they need like four bats. You know, we've talked about a lot of names here, but there are a lot of variables that you could pull on, and maybe, you know, if it's three, you could still have a good team. You could still have a team that could threaten and should threaten for the top American League East position, something that can save them the trouble of the wild card pain they've endured in recent years. So yeah, I think you got to be on the lookout for multiple bats, but those are the two positions that I really look at.
I've said this before, but I do think that the one like really dark horse internal candidate for third base, who I don't think this is likely, and you certainly don't want to go into the regular season being like, this is our plan, but I don't think it's out of the question that Damiano Palmigiani shows up to spring and wins the job at third base, or wins a job on the team. Like, he is a guy who is very intriguing. Very Davis Schneider-esque in his, you know, ability to control the zone and to work his approach and to take his walks and not swing at pitches that he can't do damage at, and to swing at pitches that he can do damage at. A lot of power, some question about the defense, but he, like, Palmigiani is one guy who I look at as might just show up to camp, mess around, and win a job.
Yeah, and this is where like a guy like Justin Turner is intriguing, because if you sign a Justin Turner, then it's like, okay, you've got the guy in place for 1 year. And then if someone can burst onto the scene, that opening is going to be there and you can move some things around to make that work.
Totally. I will, like, just even just more generally, like, this is a year where the Blue Jays just need more contributions internally than they have had over the last couple of seasons. It has not been a good couple of years for like graduating talent onto the big league roster. This really was driven home to me when we were voting for our like rookie of the year ballots and with the BBWAA recently, and it was like, oh, Davis Schneider, Spencer Horowitz, Bowden Francis, those are the only three names. And so the guy who was very clearly the rookie of the year, like, forced his way onto the roster midsummer, had a torrential few weeks, and then was kind of like a, you know, part-time player down the stretch. Like, it's, yeah, they just, you need somebody internally, whether it's Palmigiani, whether it's Alan Roden, Aurelvis Martinez, Ricky Tiedemann, like, somebody's got to come up from within and start like augmenting what you have at the big league level right now. And it's got to be this year. Like, I think you have to have a better year in terms of producing big league talent from your developmental system this year than you did last. And that is like, that's a near term issue, because you're going to have injuries. You have a lot of veterans. There's going to be pitching injuries. There's going to be injuries to, you know, the any number of these like 35-year-old dudes that we're saying the Blue Jays should sign. So you're going to want to be able to like replace them with major league capable players. It's a near-term thing. It's also a longer-term thing because, you know, two more years of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And Bo Bichette, and you're going to need to start adding some like real impactful talent internally and start like just replenishing internally now. Otherwise, you are potentially looking at a real cliff 2 years from now.
And just to add on there, because you mentioned Bo Bichette's name, you know, I've said this pretty consistently, like anytime I've been asked ever since the season ended, and it remains the same now. I don't think my answer's changed like at all, but I just don't see the Blue Jays trading Bo Bichette. I don't see them trading Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That's all I have to say on the matter.
Yeah, that was silly. I mean, Ross Atkins could not have made it any clearer the other day. Bo Bichette is our shortstop going forward. And so, yeah, there's really no need to spend any more time on it than that. Probably no need to spend any more time on this podcast because we've been going for a while. And I think that we have, you know, once you're, you know, getting to the Adam Duvall territory, I think you've probably gone far enough in terms of where this Blue Jays offseason could break.
Put them on the side of the Rogers Center. Get those jerseys printed. Hey, they missed on Ohtani, but boy, they got Adam Duvall.
You're off to the winter meetings next week. Look to sportsnet.ca for all of your content. You and Shai are going to have us covered there. And hey, man, maybe you'll even have some real honest-to-goodness transactions to talk about.
I hope so. Yeah, I think so, and I hope so. And yeah, should be interesting, right? The Ohtani stuff, even if he ends up being a Cub, that's pretty fascinating to me. So I'll be intrigued.
Totally. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Our producer is Christian Ryan. Thanks as always for listening. We'll talk to you next time on At the Letters.